Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Pottock, one of your hosts for today, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello. Hello, Kay, and welcome to you, the listener. We've got a varied program for you today, starting with the Art Walk taking place in downtown Ames this evening, and starting, I think, around 5 o'clock. We also have a community service appreciation segment today about the nonprofit organization Prairie Rivers of Iowa. And in the second half of the program, Susan Guiazda, public relations officer for the city of Ames, will be telling us about some summer activities and what we can look forward to Ames in the following month. And Kay, I believe you've got a follow-up of a previous program you did about mind-body medicine.
Yes, it's a report that provides a more specifically scientific context for the experiences of spiritual healing described in the local talk program earlier in May. I'm quite excited about the guests we'll be talking with today. It's Dr. Herbert Benson, a physician who's one of the founders of the Benson Henry Institute of Mind-Body Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. And he's also a professor of mind-body medicine at Harvard. I think he's an emeritus professor by now. He's not only an expert, he was also a true pioneer in the field. And we'll be hearing from him in about 15 minutes. But first, let's focus just a bit on the art walk taking place in Ames later today. Ursula, why don't you tell us a bit about what will be happening this evening at KHOI as our contribution to today's art walk?
Art walk is tonight in the downtown Ames area from 5 until 8 p.m., and you can discover a wide variety of artists in the settings of downtown Ames businesses, enjoy socializing and seeing downtown with fresh eyes. This is a family event with lots to do for children and adults, including KHOI's second annual Doodle Mural. This is where we doodle away at a big mural on the wall here in the KHOI building to the inspiration of live music. This is our thing during Art Walk, and it's our second annual Doodle Mural. And we really want you to join us at the KHOI storefront, where you can either watch or join in to add your own doodles to the mural and enjoy the music of Red's Blues. This is a fan-favorite event at KHOI where music and paint come together for a great time. We're located at 410 Douglas Avenue, in case you don't know where we are, in the old Ames Pantorium. So when you come to Art Walk tonight, come by, say hello to us, and join in the mural if you feel like, or just come and enjoy the music. We're right across from the Octagon and the Tattoo Parlor on Douglas Avenue. Kay, you've been working on a series, Mind-Body Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what installment you have next on that topic.
Okay, I'm very happy to do that. Last month, some members of an international organization called the Bruno Gröning Circle of Friends, an organization devoted to spiritual healing, visited Iowa and gave a series of public lectures in Ames and Des Moines. At that time, prompted by those upcoming lectures, I hosted a program on local talk focusing on spiritual healing, which could also be called mind-body medicine. I spoke to two women, both followers of Bruno Gröning, who'd experienced relief from chronic pain. One had a frozen shoulder and anxiety because of a family situation. She was taking care of her mother, who was in her late 90s, and the other was in constant pain after being in a bad car accident. They both found almost complete relief by using the meditative techniques taught by the Bruno Gröning organization. I also spoke with Reverend Deb Hill Davis of Unity Church here in Ames about the beliefs and practices of spiritual healing held by the Unity Church movement. And in last month's program, I also spoke briefly about the scientific context that could be provided for this kind of thing by the work of Dr. Herbert Benson. And I promised a future program with Dr. Benson as a guest. And today's the day. Today we'll hear from Dr. Benson himself. In the segment of the recorded interview we'll hear today, I try to focus the conversation on the specific healing situation we heard about in the earlier program, the frozen shoulder and so on. But in the early part of the interview, which we don't have time for today, Dr. Benson described his early work, his own early work, and discoveries. And though I'd already read a couple of his books, I realized then fully for the first time how much of a pioneer he'd been and how he'd broken new ground in the late 60s by daring as a medical researcher at Harvard to talk and experiment about healing effects of meditation. But let's hear a part of the interview with Dr. Benson. As this segment begins, I'm asking Dr. Benson for his perspective on the spiritual healings we heard about in last month's program, the frozen shoulder, etc. You've listed various diseases or complaints there to do with stress. But I found when I talk to people who use this technique, use what they call spiritual healing, in other words, they get into a meditative state and they say their repetitive phrase or their prayer or mantra, whatever you want to call it. Often the diseases seem to be what I call musculoskeletal, frozen shoulders, things like that. And of course, there's a story in the Unity Church about their founder who cured tuberculosis, which sounds incredible. Does that sound at all within the realm of scientific possibility to you?
Namely, what do they claim happens when they carry out their...
Well, this is historical. The one of the founders of Unity Church, which is a church that goes in for... They sit in the pews and they meditate and they think healing thoughts. One of the founders, this was in the 19th century, her name was Fillmore, cured herself, this is the story, cured herself of tuberculosis.
And what did he claim was the mechanism?
Meditating and thinking, the mantra was, I'm a child of God, I think was the first part. I'm a child of God and sickness is not my inheritance.
Fair enough. Well, you see, in a sense, what they're doing is breaking the train of everyday thought and relying on a higher power.
Right.
And that definitely is consistent with other techniques that turn off everyday thinking.
This is getting into what you call in one of your books, many of your books actually, the faith factor.
Yes.
And if I may quote you, this is from your book, Beyond the Relaxation Response. By simply refusing to believe that healing can occur outside normal known scientific channels, we lessen the probability of our understanding what is involved in the healing process. And then you go on a little bit later. We should allow ourselves to speculate about the extraordinary, to explore the unlikely, and even to hope for what is now believed to be impossible.
I think now modern technology has advanced that we can make measurements that were not possible years ago. And so I think what's actually happening is bringing together these two allegedly disparate ways of thinking, spiritual, religious, and scientific. I think there now can be a bridge between the two because of the work on the relaxation response. Over the years, new technologies develop which allow new measurements. And within the last 10 years, we have studied that when people evoke the relaxation response, they bring forth changes in their genes activity. And the genes that are changed are the genes that control inflammation, the genes that control energy metabolism, the genes that control insulin secretion, and the genes that are effective in aging.
What you call the faith factor, one explanation of that is that it is a placebo effect, which we're all familiar with from drug trials and so on.
Yes, of course. But ask it the other way. Perhaps the placebo effect, when you look at its first steps of belief, I mean, belief is a way of breaking the train of everyday thought, thinking there's a higher power which can bring this about.
I see. That's a good way to think about it, actually, yeah. Now, you talk about these repetitive phrases or mantras, and I must say, I thought in your book, Beyond the Relaxation Response, you had a load of very helpful advice for people where they could more or less look up their religious affiliation and find repetitive phrases that might work. And I must admit, when I was trying to learn to meditate, that was what I had the most trouble with, was coming up with a mantra that I could.
Well, every person is different.
Uh-huh.
That's why you could use a phrase from any religion, provided it's believed in by the person. And if you're a not believer, use a secular term, like the word peace, love, gentle, or calm.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have great difficulty sitting quietly. Then use a movement technique as present in yoga, for example.
Right.
So it's a question of individualizing it to the individual's proclivities.
And actually, talking of movement, people can do this kind of thing when they're running, for example.
Sure, the high of running, we believe, runner's high, is evoking the relaxation response. We tested that, and indeed, when they're in that high state, there's a 10% decrease in the amount of energy they're burning, even though they're doing the same work.
I've tried to use this, for example, when I'm on a treadmill, just working out on a treadmill, which I find incredibly boring. So I've tried to get into a sort of meditative state when I'm on the treadmill, because it's not boring when you're meditating. It's sort of very relaxing. So that's something I haven't mastered yet, but I gather a lot of people have done that. They can get into a meditative state when they're on a treadmill or...
Without question. In an athlete or in athletics, it's called being in the zone.
Sure. Now, what would you say is the most remarkable healing owing to this faith factor and the relaxation response that you've seen?
There are a numbers, often cured or alleviated by adding the relaxation response to their medications and to their procedures. It should be viewed as a three-legged stool, health and well-being, akin to a three-legged stool, where one leg is pharmaceuticals, the second leg is surgery and procedures, and the third leg is self-care. And in that self-care leg, we have the relaxation response. Now, I have difficulty speaking about any complete cure, because one needs a balanced stool.
Sure.
Where you should use all of these legs in healing.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows what percentage is stress.
Now, you took a trip to the Himalayas.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that and what you discovered? You were studying the Tibetan Buddhist community in the Himalayas, I believe.
The Dalai Lama and I became friendly back in the 1970s, late 1970s. When he first came to the United States, and he visited Harvard, and we met. And we talked together about the possibility of measuring mind-body effects. And he gave us permission to study people who could allegedly raise their temperatures, skin temperatures, enough to dry icy wet sheets on their naked bodies. And called Tummo Yoga, G-T-U-M-M-O.
Mm-hmm.
And we studied that and did find, indeed, in cold environments that these people could raise their skin temperatures by visualizing upon an inner fire, which burned away the defilements of improper thinking. And that's what we did measurements, in fact, published that in Nature.
So they were in a pretty cold place. They had these icy wet sheets around them, and they dried them very fast, much faster than they could have dried in any normal way.
Most people, these weren't icy sheets, but they were cold water.
Uh-huh.
They were able to not shiver, which a normal person would do, but actually get the temperature higher so that the sheets dried.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we published in Nature.
Right. So what do you think should be our attitude towards healing that apparently occurs outside normal scientifically understood channels?
I don't think that what we've studied is outside normal channels.
Uh-huh.
It's just expanding and looking at integrative changes from different disciplines that would have been isolated in the past, and that these can be used to bring about truly balanced health and well-being, to be used along with other scientifically proven drugs and surgeries. A question should be asked, is it possible through integrative techniques to study what we thought was unstudiable?
Right. Okay, have you got any final words for us?
Thank you for this interview. Thank you for alerting people of the scientifically proven capabilities they have within themselves. And they should, under their healthcare professionals' guidance, use them for better health and well-being.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Dr. Benson. I do appreciate it.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Dr. Benson of Harvard, founder and director of the Benson Henry Institute of Mind-Body Medicine, casting a scientific light on the topic of spiritual healing. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts, and this is Local Talk. And it's the beginning of the new month, and my co-host Kay Patak has one of her regular monthly segments on appreciation of a local nonprofit community service organization.
Yes, this month's organization is Prairie Rivers of Iowa, and despite the name, it's involved with much more than rivers. It's an organization that originated by an agreement with a branch of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, focusing on conservation and development of many natural and historical resources. I spoke with the vice president, Irv Klaus, who explained that after federal funding was cut off in 2011, the organization continued and thrived as a nonprofit. We'll be hearing more from other representatives of the organization later this month, including about rivers and so on. But in today's segment, Irv Klaus begins by telling me about the organization's involvement with a very specific natural resource, timber.
One of our first projects, in fact, started with deciding to try to build log cabins. We decided to try to use native white oak from southern Iowa, and so we contracted with a sawmill in southern Iowa to provide our wood, our logs, and we began to advertise in the region for county conservation boards, and even private individuals who wanted to build a log cabin could contract with us for the logs, and then we would help with the planning, the architectural plans and so on. We had access to a number of those, and so we now are building cabins, are helping to build cabins by providing logs to county conservation boards.
The new cabin just been built in Briggs Woods, hasn't there?
In Briggs Woods in Hamilton County has built five. Well, they've built five in total in the county. They've got a couple other parks where they've built them. And my family rented one. The first one actually they built was called the Legacy Cabin, and it sleeps 15 people. So my family, my three kids and their kids, last summer all rented the cabin over a weekend, and we all were able to sleep in the cabin.
Oh, very nice.
It has modern facilities such as running water and bathrooms and kitchen facilities, so it's very comfortable.
And what kind of environment is in a very beautiful area, I presume?
Yeah, Briggs Woods is a county park and has a large lake, and this cabin is built on a pretty high hill overlooking the lake, has trails and bike paths and so on, and so it's a popular park. In fact, they have done very well in renting those cabin. They built a second cabin recently of about the same size. That will be a meeting room type thing, so that businesses that want to come there with a small group of people to have a meeting can do so. So white oak is the type of wood that was used in the early cabins 150 years ago, and some of those cabins are still existing in this various county. In fact, They're being renovated and restored in some cases, and that oak wood is still good. I mean, it really lasts. It's not subject to insect or rotting or anything like that. It really maintains its integrity over those years.
Well, talking of wood and logs, another thing you do is urban forestry.
We've had an urban forestry program under a contract with the Department of Natural Resources of Iowa to provide an urban forester to advise cities about their tree forest canopy and their trees. We have the Dutch
emerald ash borer
and the ash trees dying and so on. So we've been giving advice to the people and through this urban forester. I'm not sure where that stands right now, but I think it's been the DNR has decided to discontinue it or bring the urban forester into their own organization as an employee. The urban forester was designated. We had the money, but we designated them as an employee of the RC&D.
Now, you're an organization that encourages, as you say, resource-based businesses as well as helps preserve the environment. And one of the things you do is to do with the Lincoln Highway and Byway. I presume that's to do with tourism and so on.
Yeah. As any nonprofit, we were looking for funding, and the Department of Transportation was looking for someone to administer their byway program, the Heritage Byway program across the state. And this was the Highway 30, or called the Lincoln Highway, which is the first highway that ran across transcontinental highway that ran across the country in the 1913 it started from New York to San Francisco. And much of that original highway is still intact. That is, that you can still drive it, and we have designated the original route you could drive. It's around 400 miles across the state, in the same route that the original travelers across the country were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the Lincoln Highway Association that we partner with that is interested in conserving the historical aspects of the highway and also to call attention to the amenities that exist along the highway. And these include things like natural resource parks, wetlands, prairies that are found along the ring, archaeological sites in some cases. But there are also lots of historical sites that exist in various towns and along the things, such as the old service stations. And here in Story County, we have the one over in Colo that was at the junction of the Highway 65 and Highway 30. And Highway 65 is known as the Jefferson Highway.
Oh, okay.
And it runs from Winnipeg to New Orleans. And it's getting now geared up to become...
So, and there's a historic gas station just at the junction of it.
Yes, a gas station and motel and restaurant are all there. And it's now restored and reopened as a business, and they are attracting tourists and so on who drive the highway. So the byway is a state highway byway right now. The National Byway Program has not incorporated our byway into the National Byway Program, but there's lots of indications that it might do that in the near future, because Illinois has been very active in creating a byway also.
Is this a sort of specialized term, byway?
Well, there are various kinds of... There are scenic byways that the National Byway System has designated, and there are several of those in Iowa. One that goes up through the Lusk Hills on the west and several smaller ones on the eastern area of the state. But the Heritage Byway is a little different in that we look at historical things.
Right, right.
You know, in 1913, which was the 100th year of the Lincoln Highway, there were antique car enthusiasts in both San Francisco and New York who decided to travel the highway across the country. And so there were a number of those antique cars came through. I think they met in Kearney, Nebraska for a big reunion. And so it does have a lot of historical note, and a lot of people are interested in it. I just recently got a copy of the Traveler magazine from the National Geographic Society, and they have mentioned in that small article about the Route 66,
right,
which is known all over the world, I guess, about because of songs and various things that were done to popularize that highway at one time. They're trying to designate it as a tourist attraction. Mm-hmm. But less of the Highway 66 exists than the Lincoln Highway.
Wow. There,
it's been cut up and replaced with interstate highways and so on. So it's hard to follow Route 66 in its entirety. It runs from Chicago to Los Angeles. I've seen parts of it in Oklahoma and Arizona, but there's not much of it left.
Uh-huh. But the Lincoln Highway, there's a lot more of it left.
A lot more of it left, oh. Yes. Had some programs where we try to get people to establish prairies and pollinator gardens for butterflies, and a lot of interest nowadays in the monarch butterfly. And the demise of the monarch has been declining, so they've...
So, in other words, the monarchs are coming back?
Well, it's not sure yet.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of in a beginning, because last year saw a bump in the population increase, and so we're hopeful that things are starting to turn around for them. And to keep it off the endangered species list, in other words, to make it... So all the agencies, the state, the federal government, are all got programs to promote habitat for monarch butterflies. The caterpillars of the monarch feed only on milkweed. And so the milkweed is the critical plant, and there are several species of milkweed. We're trying to get these milkweeds back into the various habitats, including prairies and in backyard gardens. I've got milkweeds now in my garden, and I've attracted some monarchs.
They look like weeds?
They have pretty flowers, actually.
They have quite attractive pods, actually.
Yeah. The butterfly milkweed, as it's called, is a very attractive orange-colored plant with the flowers. They're pretty abundant out at Hayden Park, for example. And I planted some in my garden last year, and they bloomed, and I had caterpillars on them. So.
But the caterpillars don't eat up the whole plant.
No. They will defoliate it a little bit, but not to kill the plant.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was Irv Kloss, Vice President of Prairie Rivers of Iowa, on the subject of monarchs and milkweed. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host today with KPOTOC, and with us now is Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Welcome, Susan. It's good to have you here.
Good morning.
Susan comes once a month to share city news with you. It's summertime, Susan. So let's talk summer. What's going on in Ames?
Oh, there's so much going on in Ames. You know, summer is a busy season for our parks. The swimming pool is open. Furman Aquatic Center opened over Memorial Day. Also, Homewood Golf Course is open as well. And we're seeing a lot of activity. It's been pretty rainy the last week or so the grass is growing, and we're trying to keep up with the park maintenance. Just a very busy time. I hope people have taken a minute to look at our planted flower beds that are in the parks. Those are a partnership project between Hollab's Greenhouse and the City of Ames. For 20 years, Hollab's has donated annual plants for our volunteer gardeners to plant, and those beds are almost all in, with the exception of two. There's more than 50 of them around the community. They're really, really lovely, so please take a look at those.
Speaking of flowers, who provides the flowers on Main Street? They're particularly beautiful this year.
I know that Country Landscaping designs those, and I was just coming in this morning. I saw they were watering them, and so Parks and Recreation provides the water for those, and they do have some volunteers that help maintain those.
It's very nice.
So I always pull weeds out when I'm walking by if I see one.
Well, that's great. You're a volunteer gardener, too. I do have a couple events I want to mention before we get going. I always forget. There's so much going on. I sometimes get distracted. We have an exciting new event that we're planning in Ames for the end of July. For many long-term Ames residents, the end of July is always kind of a time of dread, because it's the move-in, move-out time for students and for other community members who are on a rental lease. And what we tend to see at that time of the year is kind of a panic and sort of a dumping of materials, sometimes not always in the best places, and sometimes a dumping of materials that really could be reused.
Mm-hmm.
We're unfortunately seeing at the resource recovery plant housewares, furniture, things that really are not at the end of their life.
And the old couch on the curb.
Yeah, routine. And it really would be great to, rather than have that stuff end up in a landfill, to instead swap it with people who could really use it. So based on an event in Iowa City, we are planning the first ever rummage rampage.
Rummage Rampage.
Yeah, held in. It will be a large rummage sale held in the intermodal facility at 129 Hayward Avenue in Campus Town. Uh-huh. It will be a large rummage sale open to the public where right at the end of July, beginning of August, you can donate your furniture and housewares still in good condition or purchase furniture and housewares for your new place. And we are looking for volunteers to get involved in this project. And so we have an informational meeting, 5:30 Wednesday, June 8th, at St. John's by the campus at 2338 Lincoln Way.
So just to elaborate on this rummage rampage, if you donate, for instance, a couch, do you have to get it down to the intermodal facility yourself?
Well, that's where we're having the informational meeting. This is based on an event in Iowa City, and we need volunteers who have trucks and vans and vehicles who can help with the transportation. We also will have self-drop-off. We do believe that a lot of the furniture and items that are left at curbsides are done so because people don't have a way to transport those. And so we need to hook up people who would like to donate those materials with people who have vehicles to transport them.
Wow. It's an organizational challenge.
Yeah. And there is a hook in there. Volunteer organizations that get involved. This is a rummage sale, and there will be some proceeds. So if you volunteer, if your nonprofit group volunteers, you get a split of the proceeds at the end of the event. So, yeah, the city and the university, we're both partnering in this. Our profit is in seeing less things go to the landfill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't want to make any money off this. We want to give that money back to the nonprofit groups that volunteer. So it's an informational meeting. Anybody that's interested in volunteering or getting their organization involved, 5:30 Wednesday, June 8th at St. John's by the campus.
Okay.
And then one other event I wanted to plug really quick. We've talked about the Lincoln Way Corridor study that started at the beginning of the year, and it is continuing in full swing.
Again, that's an analysis of what's being built along Lincoln Way.
It's sort of the best use, best land uses along Lincoln Way. They studied the entire corridor east to west. Remember, east is very industrial, and it goes through town, right through campus, and then ends up on the west end, which is more retail. And then out again into residential area before it goes into the county.
And who's studying it?
It's the City of Ames Planning and Housing Department with help from their consultant, Housel and Levine. Mm-hmm. And they have identified five areas of focus, the downtown gateway, and they've actually looked at downtown as part of that Lincoln Way corridor, so looking and expanding that a little bit. Lincoln Way and Grand Avenue, which everybody can kind of visualize that. It's a very, very busy intersection, a lot of things going on there. Oak to Riverside, which is sort of a residential area right in the middle of Lincoln Way. The Campus Way, Campus Town Transition Area, and then the West Hy-Vee Retail. So five distinct areas to focus on. There's going to be a meeting. It's really kind of a come-and-go open house workshop, 3 to 8 p.m. Monday, June 6th at St. Thomas Aquinas, right there on Lincoln Way. So anybody who's interested can come in and ask questions, provide input about these focus areas, concerns, ideas that they have, and talking with planners. So,
very nice.
Those were my two big events, but I know we have a special guest today, so I don't want to take up too much of our time.
Yeah, we do have some big construction projects coming up. Oh, and by the way, the band show starting up again.
Band show concerts started last night. That was the beginning of the series. Thursday nights, pre-concert at 7 o'clock with the Ames Municipal Band taking the stage at 8. City Council night at the band show. That's the night that the council members hand out cookies, Thursday, June 23rd, with Simon Estes. Big night.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And just in case you're not here before Independence Day, just a reminder.
Idea. Just a reminder, 4th of July fireworks are always on the 3rd.
Yes.
So remember that the 3rd of July, you can enjoy your fireworks here in Ames and join us on the 4th for the community pancake breakfast in front of City Hall, followed by the parade at 11 a.m.
Okay. Now, usually when you come, we end up talking about street construction.
We do.
Because it's a thing.
It's a big thing.
It's a thing here in Ames.
It's a big thing.
And so this is a part of our conversation that has now grown into its own segment, and you've brought your own guest here.
I brought our expert, Rudy Caster, to talk to us about street construction because, you know, I was okay kind of leading in, but now we are full-blown construction season. And Rudy is a civil engineer with the City of Ames. He's one of three civil engineers that we have, and he has a lot of projects he can share with us.
So, Rudy, what's your segment called?
On the Road with Rudy.
Which you stole.
Which I just copied.
From our Channel 12 program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in. So what do you got for us? What is the top 10 of Ames construction on the roads?
Sure. Thanks, Ursula. Thanks, Kay, for having me this morning. And Susan, thanks for the invite. I'll start with kind of what's under construction currently. So you probably have seen these projects. Portions of the streets closed, work underway. We have been under construction on a number of these projects for the last few weeks. I think we started early April, even in towards the end of March there. So the first one at the top of my list, Fifth Street. I don't know if you've noticed that, but it is closed between Clark and Grand Avenue. So we're making progress on that final phase of Fifth Street, and that will complete the overall project from Duff to Grand Avenue here. Hoping to complete that here by the end of June is the goal with that. So, and we're going to achieve that. So,
yeah. So visualizing Fifth Street right now, I think your segment should be called Off the Road.
Very good. Or Closed Road.
Closed Road.
The next one is...
So that's part of just the normal upgrade that's being done kind of block by block around the city, right?
Right. For downtown particularly, that one kind of more is, you know, has the characteristics of the downtown, you know, that red stripe at the back of curb, those pedestrian ramps that are stamped and colored, you know, you're seeing those aspects and aesthetics that you're seeing in the rest of the downtown, trying to match all that together and also kind of redo some of the streets that are significantly decades old. So
it's nice results, too.
Absolutely. The next one I have is the 6th Street Bridge.
The 6th Street Bridge.
Yes.
It's been closed for a while.
It has been since last fall, early winter, over by Brookside Park. The bridge itself is substantially complete. They are actually working now on the approach pavement to the bridge. They had the east pavement removed, working on grading, and will be paving that within a matter of days, weeks. Probably the majority of the paving is going to be here this month of June into July. Hoping to make that August 1st opening date.
August 1st.
The contractor feels pretty confident that our schedule is on for that date for sure. So maybe
how does it look? Have you seen the bridge?
It's a very aesthetically pleasing bridge. It is quite wide. There are plenty of facilities for all modes, bicyclists, pedestrians, and vehicles. It's quite impressive. The rails are stamped.
Is there a separate track for bicycles?
There are. There are actually several. There are I believe it's wide enough. The bridge deck itself, the roadway section, I'll call it, has actually bike lanes. Will have bike lanes, as well as there is a 12-foot shared-use path, and then I believe a 6 or 8-foot wide sidewalk on the other side. So, yes, there are separate facilities as well as shared facilities as well. So,
That used to be a hazard, that bridge, so that's really a big improvement.
Yes, it was definitely narrow, tight quarters for everyone, so it'll definitely have that comfort level for the users in the future. So the next one I have on my list, we're doing some water main improvement over on Country Club Boulevard. And then to follow that, we're doing some sanitary manhole rehabilitations kind of citywide. We have started that. That has kind of blossomed from the citywide sanitary sewer system evaluation. Over the next 10 years, we'll be doing improvements to the sanitary sewer system. So with that start, there's a contractor who's kind of been moving quite quickly around the community, taking care of manholes that need to be basically sealed up. They're allowing groundwater infiltration. So they're fairly quick-moving operations. So they're there one day and gone the next. So
what does that mean, groundwater infiltration?
Basically, the heavy rains or just the water table itself is leaking into the sanitary sewer system itself. And causing basically a higher flow of water that's ultimately ending up at our water treatment plant. And so by doing this, water sealing tightening of the system, and we've started with the manholes here in areas that are seeing a high inflow of the groundwater to seal them up and eliminate that flow, therefore postponing or not requiring improvements to our water treatment plant in the near future. So, the next one I have on my list that's underway, there's a shared use path along the Skunk River that we're currently paving the trails. So we're making headway despite the rain we're receiving over the last few weeks, days. So that'll be a nice addition to the trail system in Ames, nice greenbelt trail.
So this is a path for biking and hiking?
Correct. It's a shared-use path, a 10-foot-wide concrete path that goes from East Lincoln Way north to East 13th Street, where we currently have a trail system there. So
along the river?
Yep, along the west bank of the Skunk River. So a very nice, it'll be a very appealing path by users. So,
and when will that open up?
So we're paving the trail now. I would anticipate this next month we're going to make some really good progress. So probably around in that July month is probably maybe when we'll kind of be wrapping things up with that project. So they're making quick progress of the paving itself. So with that, there's just some minor some fencing and just grading to follow. So and then I'll just kind of touch base on some that will kind of to occur. Another one, we've been putting out some word here for 13th Street up by Furman Aquatic Center. That one will be kicking off here on Monday. The contractor will be placing our traffic control through that area. This stretch is basically from the railroad tracks west to approximately Furman's Aquatic Center. We'll be doing full street reconstruction as well as improvements to the north and south side of the road for the shared use path and adding a sidewalk on the north side.
On the north side. And there's kind of like a hill.
There is.
Where the people have a garden on that hill, so you'll be cutting into that hill and make room for a sidewalk?
Right. We will be installing a retaining wall basically to hold that hill in place and allow us to put our flat area there for the sidewalk installation.
Yep. I've been seeing little flags stuck in the ground. Is that basically marking where the sidewalk will go?
Typically, those are the utility locates. They're more along the lines. There's different colors to them, you know, the water, the sanitary, the private utilities as well, your telecommunication lines. They're just marking those out so that we're aware of where they're at, and obviously we'll be exposing them so we do not hit them because those are an inconvenience and a costly repair too. So,
is that actually property that belongs to the homeowner there that is being used, or is that city property?
All of the permanent structure, the wall itself, will be in the public right-of-way. There is some temporary easements, as called, where just to kind of grade that top of the wall, earth above there, into it and tie it in. So the work may kind of spill onto some public or private property, but all of the improvements are on public ground. So,
Rudy, before you go, one of the questions we get all the time is, why are we doing all these projects at the same time? They're on major arterials, and we just got staying open, and 6th Street isn't open. Why are we doing 13th Street?
Well, just based on, you know, the street itself and the deterioration of the street, it's beyond rehabilitation. A full reconstruction is needed. And we definitely took into account, you know, this is an arterial street. It does impact a lot of commuters. It impacts Iowa State users, special event traffic, the Ames Community School District traffic, as well as just local access to the residents. So we definitely do have our public outreach meetings. We try to get as much input as we can. We communicate with our city council and with our neighborhood associations and just trying to, what's the best plan we can come up with? Yes, it's an inconvenience, but what is the least, or what is the minimizing inconvenience we can cause? So
you have more projects in the summer when there's less people in Ames?
We definitely do try to achieve them, but it seems that these projects are becoming more and more involved in depth just due to the aging of the, not only the street itself, but the infrastructure, the sanitary storm sewers, the water mains below the surface that we're having to address as well. And when you start having to make those repairs before you can do your actual street repairs, it adds weeks to the construction. So, yes, we try to accomplish them in the summer months as we can, but at times it's not possible. So,
okay, we're going to have to wrap up in a minute here. Any last projects you want to mention before we wrap up?
We will be starting a project, two projects here very recently. Friley Road reconstruction between Beach and Gaskell Avenue on June 20th. North 2nd Street on Thursday, June 9th, from North Riverside Drive to North Maple Avenue will be starting here next week as well. And then probably in a month, approximately a month's time frame, we're calling it the Wellens area. Several blocks of local streets over there will be getting reconstructed as well. That's kind of the west side of West Ivy, south of Lincoln Way. several streets in there. So, yes, we're ramping up. We've already kind of started our construction season here, but I think this month's really going to be seeing a lot of projects kicking off too. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. Rudy Castor?
Yes.
From the City of Ames, civil engineer. Thank you for coming in with your report on the streets, and please come back and keep us updated. It's a big topic in our town.
I'd be happy to, Ursula. Thank you.
And thank you for being with us today also, Susan Guiasa, Ames Public Relations Officer.
Thank you. And I just want to remind people, cityofames.org/construction is where you can get all the updates on all the projects.
Thank you. Say that again.
cityofames.org/construction.
Okay. And you've been listening to Local Talk. Thank you for tuning in and joining us. I've been one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and Kay Puttuck has been your other host. Remember that on June 7th, Tuesday, there'll be a countywide primary to determine the Democratic candidate for the pending election to fill the seat for the Story County supervisors. The primary on Tuesday will be to decide between Lars Olson and Reno Berg for the Democratic ticket. So listen to KHOI this evening at 7 p.m. to hear a recording of their recent debate that was hosted by the League of Women Voters. That's 7 to 8 p.m. here at 89.1 FM KHOI. And remember, Art Walk is tonight. Please come and join us between 5 and 8 to be part of the KHOI Doodle Mural Squad. You can either watch us paint the mural or be part of painting the mural as we listen to Red's Blues here. Live music. It'll be lots of fun. And we're located at 410 Douglas Avenue in the old Ames Pantorium across the street from the Octagon.
During today's local talk, we spoke of Klaus, Vice President of Prairie Rivers of Iowa, and Dr. Herbert Benson, founder and director emeritus of the Benson Henry Institute of Mind-Body Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital. And, of course, Susan Guiasda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, was with us, together with civil engineer Rudy Kester.
Kester. Local Talk was engineered today by Jonah DeGeese. Thank you, Jonah. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, where you can listen to this show. And you can also hear all our past shows at that website as well. That's khoifm.org. And Susan, you want to... Susan, Kay,
please remember
you?
That you as listener are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as an audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.